now then, in our quest to find the unsung heroes, we've got so many talented people who've been doing so many talented things, and yet maybe we don't know enough about. And here is Mr. Paul Carrick. So, Paul, a very good afternoon and welcome to the show.
Afternoon, mate. How's it going?
That's fine, thank you. And, of course, I'm really staggered when I start reading your biography. You've done so many things. It's absolutely amazing. Let me go back to your native Sheffield.
Yeah.
And, of course, the early days when you were banging away on the drum kit in your parents' attic, as I'm reading. First of all, is that accurate?
Yeah.
Okay, because you read these things on the internet. I don't want to take everything for granted, you know.
No, I grew up in Sheffield. We actually lived in the back of a shop. My parents had a shop. We sold wallpaper and paint, and my dad was a painter and decorator. And we lived in the little room at the back of the shop in a terraced row, you know, and upstairs in the attic, there were a few bits and bobs knocking about, a couple of drums that my dad used to have, and I kind of made up a drum kit and used to play along to records as, you know, as a little kid.
Yeah. Now,
that's how it started.
It's really interesting for me that obviously it's written into your biography that you had the obligatory trip to Hamburg. So what did you do, and where does that fit in?
Well, I grew up you know, playing in bands at school, and as soon as I left school at 16, you know, I was kind of already semi-pro. Really, and like many other bands before us, you know, we auditioned, we came down to London and auditioned to get some work over in Germany, and that's what we did. And one of the first places we did was we had a residency at the Top 10 Club in Hamburg. I'm talking about the late 60s now.
Right.
And, you know, this was a great sort of apprenticeship and a great eye-opener. I mean, back in those days, going to Germany and Hamburg, you know, seemed quite exotic, really.
Yeah, well,
you know, we hadn't travelled that much, you know, out of our own area, but to be abroad and in another country was quite, you know, fascinating.
Now, where this gets really interesting for me is on one particular part of my shows, we've been investigating the Merseybeat boom and the people that were all involved in that.
Yeah.
Did you meet King Size Taylor, who was over there? He still lives there, doesn't he?
No, I would imagine that would have been, you know, just a few years before us.
Okay.
You know, the Beatles and all that had been there in the early 60s, I guess, and I suppose we were getting there, you know, after all that kind of boom, really.
Okay.
I never met King Size, no, but I've heard a lot about him as a big fan of all the Mersey bands. You know what I mean? That's really what got me excited and interested in music as a kid. You know, the whole thing, the Beatles, Gerry and the Pacemakers, the Searchers, the Foremost, the Mersey Beats, the whole lot of them. I mean, I just absolutely loved it, and it really inspired me to get into music.
Okay, now along came this. And I'm just going to take the liberty of playing a little bit of the music first so that we can relate what we're talking about to our listeners.
Okay. We've got quite a long intro here.
Well, we could talk over it, I suppose, really.
I think that's what it was made for, actually.
Well, to be honest with you, you see, it was good. And I was working on Radio Merseyside when this particular song comes out. And, of course, as you say, it's a lovely long intro because it's one of those songs DJs crave for this sort of stuff, you know, to see whether or not we can get the timing just right when you're singing.
Here we go.
See, that was a very, very big favourite of mine. I really loved playing it. But your band is written as a pub rock band. What was it, a pub band?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, as I said, I did the whole Hamburg thing and went through various musical phases. I was in a progressive rock band for several years. And then I'd settled in London by this time, and we met up with, you know, this group of musicians, got together as singer-songwriter types, and we formed the band Ace. And yeah, we started off playing in the pubs, around London, as it did a lot of bands at that time. It was kind of the throwback sort of thing from the progressive rock thing. It was getting back to what it was all about, which was playing music for people, having some fun, and that's what that whole movement, if you like, was about. And we were one of the lucky ones. We got ourselves a little record deal with a very small label, and we made that record. That was our first recording, and we had an unbelievable hit with it all around the world.
I love this song. Now, looking at your career, I will say, it just the mind boggles at the people that you've worked with. Let's go to Frankie Miller and Roxy Music. Tell me about your time with them.
Okay. Well, you've picked two sort of extremes there, really. Frankie Miller, the fantastic soul singer from Glasgow, who I met when I was in Ace, actually, in one of the pubs we were just talking about, the Hope and Anchor, in London, which was kind of one of the, you know, places where it all began. I remember seeing Frankie rehearsing with a band then, and he was just absolutely blew me away. I thought it was fantastic. It wasn't until a few years later I got to actually work with him and worked on some of his recordings and rewrote some songs, and I toured with him. I played keyboards in his band for a little while, and it was great to see him recently at the Eagles concert. We both have songs on the new Eagles album, so it was great to see him. He's not in the best of health, but he's still got a fantastic spirit, and he's a great guy.
And funny enough, you see, without knowing that we were going to be able to do this interview, I have been hammering the Eagles of late because they've got a couple of really nice new tracks that I haven't been sort of hammered to death.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan also of people like Albert Lee, who we had on the show about 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's names like your own and Albert Lee, which a lot of the, the listeners to a radio station might not realise all the things you've done. Let me ask you, for example, you work with The Undertones, you work with Nick Lowe. I mean, the sort of range of people you've worked with, it must give me the impression that you must have a really good range of playing skills.
Well, I would say that I've developed them over the years. I mean, I'm totally self-taught in everything I do. I started out on the drums. I sold my drums and bought a keyboard as a teenager, and I've always picked up a guitar and played a guitar, so I play a bit of everything. I'm not, you know, technically brilliant on anything, to be honest with you, but I must have something. I think I have a bit of a knack to play the right thing at the right time. And like you say, I've had a very varied career. A lot of the names that people pick up on from, you know, the CV or whatever you call it, I may have played only on one or two tracks, but you mentioned The Undertones there. I mean, I only played on one or two tracks on their first album. And to be honest, I think that's because I live round the corner from the studio. And if anybody needed any keyboards doing, I used to get a call about 10:30 when the pubs were kicking out. And they said, could you pop round and just, you know, do a little bit of something for us? But apart from that, I've been involved in, you know, 3-4 groups in a much more committed way. You know, obviously I'm thinking Mike and the Mechanics.
Well, funny enough, I've just got this only, basically I wanted to make sure that we had something that the listeners could relate to, and again, maybe there is no connection whatsoever, but there's a huge intro on Silent Running, of course.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, was it something that you or others had talked about and maybe decided after how long it was good DJ fodder, or is it just coincidental?
I think it's coincidental. I mean, you mentioned that song. That was actually the first record by Mike and the Mechanics, and the first song I sang with them. To be honest with you, the way that came about, and there is a connection, funnily enough, because I don't know if you've heard of a songwriter called B.A. Robertson.
Oh, yes. Didn't he have a minor hit, didn't he?
He did, but he wrote quite a lot of the songs for Mike and the Mechanics, or co-wrote them.
Right,
A lot of their big hits, and in fact, he co-wrote Silent Running.
Oh, okay.
And so I met B.A., and I helped him out by singing a demo of a song he'd written, and he said to me, "Listen, I'm writing a lot of songs with Mike Rutherford from Genesis. He's making a record, and would you be interested in coming down and singing some of the tracks?" And I said, "Sure." So when I turned up at the studio, that the music for that track had already was already recorded and down, so I didn't have much input in that. So you can't blame me for the intro, but. It's funny you should mention it, because that's the connection.
Right. Let me just play a tiny bit, just for our listeners. Here we go. Believe in me, I'm with the high command. Can you hear me? Can you hear me running? Can you hear me running? Now, I've got a fantastic range of names. People like Eric Clapton, B.B. King, Simply Red, Van Morrison and Elton John. And, of course, being invited by Elton to play on Something About the Way You Look Tonight, the B-side of Candle in the Wind, and officially the biggest-selling single ever. I mean, that must have been tremendously encouraging for a man looking for, good things to happen in his life. That was fantastic.
Well, yeah, I mean, those things were, you know, they are fantastic when you get the opportunity to play with people like the ones you've mentioned, and it's really, you know, the cherry on the cake. I mean, it looks quite impressive on paper, but, you know, there's fairly few and far between those things. I mean, and also, you got to remember that I've always considered myself to be a singer-songwriter, you know, and that's what I really like to do. But to get the opportunity, as I say, to play on a record with Elton John or Eric Clapton, usually it's keyboards, you know.
Yeah.
And it's a great accolade, and I because I know that they could get anybody they want, you know, they got the pick. So it's fantastic feather in your cap to get, you know, asked to do that sort of thing.
Now, what's also an interesting thing for me is around the time I started thinking of coming out to live and work in Spain,
yeah.
I started watching the Operación Triunfo.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, there's a link, and I couldn't believe it when I was reading this. So please, would you tell us, how did you get involved in that, and what did you do?
I did very little, to be honest with you. I think I'll have to get that taken off the,
okay.
off the bio, because a lot of people pick up on that, and it was such a small thing. I mean, I was invited over as a guest to, you know, go on the show, meet some of the kids, talk to them about, you know, my career, and answer some of the questions that they were interested in making a career from music. And I sat around at the piano and sang a few things with them, and then, and that was it. That's the sum total of my involvement, to be absolutely honest with you. I'm not usually a big fan of those kind of talent contest kind of things, but I think the one in Spain was, I liked it better than the English versions. It was a little bit less harsh, a little bit less cutthroat, and not only that, the kids actually had a lot of talent.
Right. I know when we were here, the thing was going full pelt, and of course, it was the talk of everybody. So it took my eye,
well,
obviously.
I went on, actually, to meet one of the, I think, I don't know if he was the winner or the runner-up, there's a guy called Juan Tenner.
Okay, the one I remember is Rosa.
I don't know.
Okay.
Was that a young lady?
It was, indeed.
With a sort of dreadlocky kind of hair.
Well, I think she changed her appearance massively during the course of the show, you know.
Well, anyway, the guy I'm talking about, was very good, very good. I did actually go on and record a track with him later in the show, but he's a very talented kid.
Okay, let me ask you about your connection with the Beatles then, and Ringo, of course.
Okay.
So you now, obviously, again, I got to go by what I read, and I like to check the facts. And I'm saying that it's written here that you fulfilled a boyhood dream in 2003 by performing with Ringo, of course, at American concerts.
Yeah, well, Ringo, I think for about the last 15 years or more, maybe more now, as most years, he puts together a band, which he calls the Ringo Starr All-Stars, and the idea being to go on tour in America and play some shows and have fun. And be Ringo, I think that's his motivation. And I was one of the lucky people to get invited to go on tour with him. Part of the criteria for being in the band is you've got to have at least 3 hits. So I got in. Because basically everyone takes it in turns of playing their hits. We play some Beatles songs with Ringo singing, and of course everyone else takes their turn. And I did How Long, the song you played. I did The Living Years, the song I recorded with Mike and the Mechanics. And I think the other one was Tempted, which was a song that I recorded when I was in Squeeze.
Yeah.
So it was absolutely fantastic time. And I just never got over the idea of sitting there playing away, and you're looking over, and there's Ringo in his own inimitable style. It was great, absolutely wonderful time.
Well, it's funny because you know until it actually happens, and you actually in the presence of these people that have done so many big things and worldwide things, it does take your breath away, doesn't it?
Yeah.
How did you feel when you were asked by Jules Holland to join Hootenanny on a New Year's Eve? Because he is a bit special, and I would imagine it must be great for a fellow musician who plays with you like that. I mean, did you enjoy it?
Yeah, of course I did, yeah. But, I mean, funnily enough, I mean, Jules and I go back quite a way, because I actually replaced him in Squeeze. He was the keyboard player in a band called Squeeze.
Yeah, I remember that band.
I'm going back to 1979 now, and he left the band to go solo, and I actually replaced him in Squeeze for a while. And so I've met him on many occasions, and it was great to get, you know, the chance to be on the show. It's probably, you know, it's one of the few music shows we've got, you know, credible music shows, and a lot of people want to get on it, so I was delighted to get a chance. Yeah.
I just love the way he can just busk in with any band. It's really good, because, you know, he changes his style, and I'm pretty sure that you're the same.
Yeah.
And it's lovely to play with musicians who you feel comfortable with anyway, isn't it?
Well, I've also been a guest artist on a couple of his albums recently. The Big World, is it Small World album, and the country album he did recently as well. I was also a guest on that, so as I said, there is a bit of a connection, and it's fantastic the success he's had. I mean, he's absolutely a household name now.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's absolutely brilliant. Good luck to him. He's a good lad, and I've got all the time in the world for him. I love his band. I've been to see his show many times. It's a fantastic night, and I'm absolutely taking my hat off to him.
Well, I'm a big fan of his stuff as well, and I tell you, the more I look at your stuff, I haven't realised that I'm a big fan of what you do as well, because, you know, in fact, I've got to dig out this track from the Eagles, because I liked, I think, is it How Long was the track that I think I like best.
Yeah.
Just one of those things.
That's a funny one there, you know. I think there's a bit of a story there, because obviously my first hit was a song called How Long, a different one altogether.
Yes.
I was told recently by Timothy Schmidt from the Eagles that song, the Eagles version, is not a new song. It was actually written back then in the 70s when our version of our song, the Ace song, came out, and it made the Eagles kind of put their one on the back burner until now. That's what Timothy told me. So I think that's fantastic.
Well, look, Paul Carrack, I want as many people to know your work, because, believe me, I'll be looking out some of your tracks over the next couple of weeks. I wanted to ask you, you've got a connection here with Spain, haven't you?
Well, I've got a lot of friends over there, and I've got a small apartment myself down in on the Costa del Sol, so I don't get out often enough for my liking, but maybe that's a good thing. It means that I'm still quite busy. So whichever way it works, if I get less busy and I get to spend more time in Spain, that's good. Or if I'm still, you know, getting the calls and still working away over here, you know, can't be bad, can it? No lose situation.
It's wonderful. Look, I'm going to make a podcast site on my a podcast page on my podcast site. Link it up to your site, and I'll send you an email of where it can be found.
Brilliant.
And I've got to say, we've enjoyed your music. I'm sorry that we haven't realised who it was up till fairly recently.
No worries.
And I tell you, we've really enjoyed the songs that you've produced, and well done.
Thank you.
Paul Carrick, thanks very much indeed for your time.
Okay, you're welcome.
All the best to you. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Absolutely fabulous. Thank you to E.T., by the way, who lent me this. I was rooted round through all my stuff trying to find it today. Eric said, here we go. So, this is Paul Carrick's song.